Inoho, please be seated.
Good morning. Anything arising overnight? Hopefully.
I can report back on a number of the matters discussed yesterday, the first of which relates to the trend analysis for the water quality state of environment reporting. That work has been concluded and a report is now available. My plan at this stage is to have Dr. Snelder prepare a brief supplementary statement of evidence, simply attaching that report in much the same way as he did with the underlying data.
Okay, and it's going to tell us, it's going to report on how? Is it going to be reporting against
the national bottom, the NOF framework in the 2020 NPSFM.
NOF framework, okay. And is it going to include any trend analysis or not?
Yes, it does include trend analysis.
All right. All right. As I indicated yesterday, I mean, it's generally relevant, but as I've indicated yesterday, irrigation dams are to, you know, go ahead alone, and I know that's not the ORA case, it's broader than that, but if there was some provision for irrigation dams because of health and safety, dam integrity issues, then we've got to be looking, I would have thought, at water quality, because we need to be taking whole of catchment matters, mountains into the sea approach, which is NPS. So we need to sort of go in with eyes wide open in terms of what's actually being proposed here. If nothing yet's been proposed here, so, you know, it's still an issue that's under development. Okay, so when do you think you'll have that in?
Within the next couple of days, okay. I would hope.
Any issues arising, Council, who are here? No? No issues. Okay. And so just for the record, we've got Mr. Welsh, Mr. Page and Ms. Williams here now for the Director General. So good morning to you. Okay. Right. Thank you. So within the next 2 days. All right.
Yes.
That's the first issue.
Second issue, my friend Mr. Page and I are working on a joint memorandum in relation to the dams and issues that arise.
Okay.
We will have that filed as soon as we have concluded the drafting of that joint memorandum.
Okay.
And in addition to that, the council team is also trying to track down the various permits that aren't able to be easily located by Mr. Page in relation to the clients that he represents.
Yep. And Fraser Dam, I'm rather hoping, I don't know whether Fraser Dam's up for reconsenting or not in this round, but if it were, surely that is actually in its application, so you can find the details there. Yeah.
Yes. Do you want to?
LandPro are working on that, and we've got two from LandPro in the back of the court who have personal knowledge of what's going on there.
Yeah.
Fraser Dam's operated as a hydro dam only by Pioneer Energy, and so Fraser used to be irrigation, but it's not now. And so Fraser and the Onslow Dam and the Teviot scheme are the two big dams for Pioneer, and they are subject to current applications.
Is that consistent or inconsistent with evidence given via Friday, I think?
Thursday, maybe?
Thursday, Friday, and I've forgotten the witness's name.
Yes.
There was a farmer who came out for Fraser Dam and concerns generally about integrity of structure and the use of water for irrigation. I thought, you know, but...
Was the chair of one of the irrigation schemes?
Yeah.
Can't recall. Sorry, McMillan. Mr. Martin, possibly?
Not Mr. Martin. Mr. Martin, Graham Martin's the former EO, isn't he? For
Pizer, actually. Mr. McMillan.
Mr. McMillan.
Yes, my recollection was he was discussing Fraser Dam in the context of supply of water for irrigation. We'll have to get to the bottom of that.
Have to get to the bottom of that.
Yes.
I know he gets free electricity, I think, was it, which was relevant also for the irrigation scheme as well. Yeah.
I happen to know because I acted on the re-consenting of Ernscliw Irrigation Company's permit, and Ernscliw is the owner of the dam that Pioneer operates, which is the Fraser Dam. And the irrigation supply was replaced when Clyde Dam was built, and it now uses Lake Dunstan water. So I'm not sure what Mr. McMillan would have been discussing, but...
We shall get that to you, and you shall see what he had to say about that. But certainly Fraser was on our radar.
Yes.
And in fact, that was the first time that Region responded and said, yeah, might need to have a closer look at some of these dam structures, but it is contingent on, you know, getting primary evidence.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm not sure that whether it's hydro or irrigation matters particularly in terms of the maintenance obligations for the dam. There might be some policy differences in terms of the NPS REG, but the practical difficulties for dam owners are the same no matter what the water's used for, really. So, but I can't take it any further. I don't know what evidence the court's received about that.
Oh, well, we'll send you a copy this morning as to what we've received from Mr. McMillan, and I'm not sure that our questions or your questions really got much further because the witness couldn't assist us.
No, he didn't have a working knowledge of permits underpinning that structure.
Yeah, okay. All right. So be grateful for your response in relation to Fraser when you see the evidence, especially if Fraser has been reconsented and it's not up for, you know, the dam structure itself, either the impounding of water or the use of water for hydro or the taken use for water for irrigation is, you know, not up for reconsenting. So, yeah.
Well, the other thing I can say about that is that Mr. Curran, whose supplementary evidence is an application for the court... Two things about that. Mr. Curran is also acting on the Fraser issue, so he has personal knowledge of the consenting arrangements for Fraser Dam. Secondly, I can report that no council has raised any objection about Mr. Curran's supplementary evidence being received. So,
yeah, we certainly had questions about that, the relevance of that evidence. Yeah. So, anyway, we'll send you, and you can show Mr. Curran what it is that we've received, but we certainly thought the dam structure itself was, you know, it's been raised with us. So we thought it was related to irrigation. Whether it's related to hydro and irrigation, the issues are just the same. I don't know. But anyway, it's there, so we're just trying to get to the bottom of it.
Yes, all right.
Okay.
The third topic to provide an update relates to the sequencing of witnesses to be called next week in response to the joint witness statements.
I'm going to send you a direction about that. I mean, I have taken on board the entire region's desire not to hear too much from the court, so I've been trying to save things for a single minute, which we can release, should be able to release today now that we've got the priority JWS in, and I've asked counsel to confer and to report back to Mr. Cooper, actually, about your timing and sequencing issues rather than bog us down, because we'll do whatever. We'll be ready. Yeah. Does that help?
That will certainly assist.
Yeah.
Ms. Mallop asks, does that mean we don't need to file a memorandum today?
Yeah, definitely. No memo today. You'll get a minute today that says, please talk to Mr. Cooper by Friday.
Okay.
Yeah.
The discussions are reasonably well advanced,
okay.
So we should be able to...
Yep.
Ensure that next week hopefully runs smoothly.
Okay, yeah, no, that's good. I'll just make a note. And you hope to have the issues documented as between, yourself and Mr. Page at the moment?
Yes.
By when?
I would hope by this time tomorrow morning.
It's just that you might actually have some... knowing what the issues are, that'll frame your... Surely that'll frame your questions for the witnesses to come today.
There's one witness, Mr. Sheehan, today.
Yeah.
And he's dealing not with the planning related aspects, but in terms of the questions for the witnesses tomorrow.
Mr. Sheehan's on tomorrow?
He's
or on today?
I think he was on the schedule for today.
Yeah. You see, I I don't know what the integrity issue is. I mean, what we had with Fraser, from my recollection, is there may be an integrity issue. Well, there may be, or there may not be. But we had an absence of technical evidence to support an integrity issue with that dam structure. It's not a good place for the court to be in if we're being asked to do something. So, again, this is the evidential foundation. So you'd have to know what you're going to be asking Mr. Sheenan about the same thing. If a false dam, I'm aware through the evidence that there's been long standing discussion as to what to do with false dam. I think in both in terms of reconsenting the dam or raising the dam, all options on the table. But you know, but again, is that an integrity issue or is that actually more about a resource response, you know, in terms of what the demand is for water? So you'd have to know your technical questions.
Yes, having read Mr. Sheehan's evidence, he draws a distinction between the permits for the structures and the permits for the take and use of water and says he's only commenting on the former. So I thought I could explore the first part of that with him to get a better understanding in terms of what his state of knowledge is, because it's not clear from reading his evidence which dams he actually has any knowledge of. It's not grounded in any context in terms of individual dams. So,
And this is probably more a question for you, Mr. Page. Is Mr. Sheenan across the other dams, with the exception of Fraser, perhaps, in terms of the structural integrity of those dams?
I know that he has personal knowledge of 7 of the 9 Manuharikia catchment dams.
When you say 7 of 9, are we actually talking about their on-farm structures as well as public, you know, the larger structures such as pool boom and so forth?
Well, there are a great many.
you have to pin this. You know, what are we being asked to do? Write policy for 9 or write policy for the 5 that we know about? We think it's about 5. Or don't write policy because you want everything, you know, you want everything to... I'm not sure where your relief is standing at the moment, but you may want everything to go under the operative plan, so we don't really have to worry about writing policy.
Yes. Well, I mean, the relief that was in Mr. Curran's evidence in chief seeks a carve-out, for want of a better description, for damming consents, and that's not specific to the dams that the court's identified as being of interest. It would apply more widely than that.
And so, you know, that could be a direction that the court could go in, but we would want to know, again, the four corners. You know, I'm putting it out there that these are the following irrigation dams.
Yes.
If you know that's wrong, your obligation is to tell me that that is wrong, and then to identify all of those dams. Unless, of course, it's spelled out in Mr. Curran's evidence, and I didn't think that it was, but it may be.
Well,
so apologies to him.
Yes, well, part of the difficulty is around the current regulatory state in relation to large dams, because, as Mr. Sheehan will be able to explain to the court, regulation is expected to arrive, I think, later this year, which specifies what are large dams that regulations are going to apply to, and thus various maintenance obligations arise in relation to. And that hasn't hit the ground yet, and so we can't be precise about exactly which of the dams in Otago the large dam regulations are going to apply with and which ones won't. That will become clear in due course, but as at today, I can't give you a list of the large dams in Otago that the pending regulatory framework are going to attach to. And I don't think the Regional Council is in any better position than I am about that.
But you could give me a list of dams that you think ought to be carved out. Yeah?
That my clients are aware of, yes, we can do that.
Well, and I think, yes, you can and yes, you will, so that we know what we're dealing with.
Yes.
You know, are they the large dams which are providing a service for multiple uses, you know, hydro, irrigation, or are they on you know, on-farm storage dams as well. I don't know. So, yes. And I want to know what we're dealing with. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. So when do you think you'll identify that, or do you, will you lead that from Mr. Curran?
Well, I need to consult with my team over various breaks during the day to see what the state is of databases which enable dams of particular scales to be identified.
Okay. So I've noted today, and again, we can halt the hearing in order for this evidence to come in through Mr. Sheenan, quite possibly through Mr. Sheenan and through Mr. Curran, to identify the dams in relation to which ORUG is seeking an exception or a carve-out for. That's your case. You're to identify them. Court is interested in the topic either for a carve-out or perhaps an exception in PC7. Don't know which way it ought to go, but are quite clear we should be told what is the structure that you have under consideration, so that we know, you know, what is the ambit of the carve out? Is it all dams? Is it on-farm dams, off-farm, on or off-farm dams, or both? And you should be able to tell us. And I would have thought that that was something that we're quite interested to hear from Mr. Sheenan about. You know, if there is an integrity issue which has health and safety consequences. That is something Mr. Sheenan, as the engineer, should be able to tell us about. What does that even mean, other than a general unease about some of these dam structures because they're old?
Yes.
So we're getting the unease. We've heard it. We get it. And now we're looking for, you know, how is it just an unease, or is it actually based on fact? Now, what are the facts?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we can certainly pursue that with the witnesses.
And if we need to call a halt for those two witnesses, I think in particular, there may be others, but those two in particular, to do some work around this, we'll do that because the issue of dam integrity is too important for them to be winging it. You know, it has to be founded on fact. See what the policy response is.
Yes.
Mm.
All right, thank you.
Right. So if we proceed with your witnesses, it will be on the basis that they, in fact, are across the dams that they're interested in and that they're able to articulate the dams to which the carve-out will apply or a bespoke policy will apply in PC7. It could go both ways.
Yes. Well,
it may, in fact, go no way at all because of the NPS looking for water quality and quantity issues now to be managed whole of catchment, Kiuta Katai. You know, it's both the whole of the parts of the catchment now. So it may be that it goes nowhere. And again, that's why water quality is really important in understanding that.
Yes, well, I understand and accept that the court may well decide that dams shouldn't be treated any differently.
No,
that's a live issue.
Yeah.
and that's really a matter for policy as much as anything else. But
yeah.
I accept that the court needs to know what are the issues in relation to the dams we know about and which ones they are. So we'll certainly work on making sure that the court has that information.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Curran. So, Mr. Curran, I'm not quite sure why Mr. Curran has written a brief of evidence, and I haven't read it. I've glanced over it. I think... you are seeking leave to adduce further supplementary brief from Mr. Curran because I think of a change to the objective or not?
Well, the planners' joint witness conferencing didn't include Mr. Curran because his evidence in chief didn't address the schedule.
But he could have come in on the objective. We plainly said the objective wasn't, we wanted people to look at the objective for those for these purposes.
Yes.
And the purposes are spelled out in Tom de Palsmaker's evidence in chief. Do you also need to respond to that? And broadly, what's the question? You know, those five subparagraphs in his evidence.
Yes. Well, I have to say that for my part, I wasn't alert to the fact that Mr. Curran wasn't part of that process and therefore wasn't alert to the need to have him included to discuss the objective. So what has happened is that the joint witness statement has been produced, And then the question about whether the objective of the plan change directly deals with the NPS had caused Mr. Curran to reflect on what that means in relation to dams and what the NPS has to say about water bodies that are formed by dams.
I don't think that the questions asked planners to consider the NPS. The question, because there could be broader issues in the objective in play, if you like, because, yes. You know, it may be that there is that objective needs to be worked on more, you know, to go in the ORUG way or to go in the Director General way or yes. Fish and Game way. So there may be other reasons why we would want to revisit the objective, but we said for this limited purpose, did we need to revisit the objective, you know, and to pick up on some of the signals or purposes in Mr. De Palsmaker's evidence. So it wasn't working particularly on the NPS. It was working, or was meant to be working, on policy signal. For example, one of the policy signals, I think in subparagraph D or E of Mr. De Palsmaker's evidence, paragraph number I've utterly forgotten, was the discouragement of further investment in irrigation infrastructure. So that was a policy signal. Did that actually have to be spelled out in the objective? So we weren't particularly working on the NPS. The NPS applies.
Yeah, well, that's understood. But it's simply the way that came forward triggered in Mr. Curran's mind an issue about what does the NPS have to say about the water bodies that are created by damming permits. And so we felt that the better way to deal with his thinking about that was to put it in writing by way of a supplementary brief rather than to deal with that through examination of witnesses and closing submissions.
So is this, so in fact it's got nothing to do with the expert conferencing. It's Mr. Curran thinking about his evidence further, and it looks like either a policy or a legal argument being raised by him as to the application of the NPS to storage of water behind a large dam or a small dam.
And whether that constitutes a water body for the purposes of
that's
the NPS.
That's a legal
objective.
Argument, isn't it? Looks like it. Honestly, when I read through it, that looks like a submission.
Well, yes, it is, but it has there's a policy consequence to the outcome of that one way or the other.
What's your response to this?
I've only read that evidence very briefly, and it struck me on that initial reading as going a little further than I would have anticipated at this point in the hearing. It struck me that the issues being raised might have been issues that were to be addressed following the provision of the joint witness statement. So the joint witness statement and the drafting of the objective, two options of it put forward, I had thought that perhaps some of those issues might have been addressed then in questioning of those witnesses. Rather
you mean
than
actually in the conference itself?
No, in the testing of the output from the joint witness statement.
You mean the first joint witness statement?
Yes, which we haven't had. No, it will be the 7 May version with the two different versions of the objective. These types of issues I thought might have then been tested with the impaneled witnesses.
Oh, I see. Rather than Mr. Curran.
Yes.
Except that the impaneled witnesses don't necessarily have dams on their hearts or in the forefront of their minds.
Quite possibly. It may well have been that Mr. Page may have led that evidence when Mr. Curran was called he's due tomorrow, I think, with the schedule.
I tend to agree with Mr. Page. It's better if the evidence has come, it's better to be in writing.
Have it in writing, given the complexity of it.
Yeah.
So in terms of what to do with it,
it appears to be evidence. I don't think it appears to come out of the joint witnessing process, conferencing itself, but it just appears to be some further thoughts, if you like, to do with the water body. Not sure what the issue is, but
Yes.
Yeah, what is the nature of impounded water? Is it a water body or not?
Yes, which that struck me as a legal question.
Yeah.
Insofar as the evidence was perhaps, was also helpful, it did provide some further information about falls dam
in terms of the
permit. So that part of it, in a sense, I read with some enthusiasm to see we're actually getting some factual information.
Yeah, okay.
I'm happy to have the evidence produced, and I'd be minded then to cross Mr. Curran on the contents of that.
Yeah, okay. All right, anybody, council or parties, anybody have any different view in terms of the production of Mr. Curran's supplementary brief, raising an issue as to whether impounded water is a water body for the purposes of the MPS?
I don't have a different view. It sounds like it's relevant and going to be of assistance. Better to have it writing.
Okay. So we will allow it, but before we hear from Mr. Curran, I want you to identify the issues which are arising in relation to that new brief. Have I sufficiently articulated the issue, which I think you would say is both a planning and possibly a legal issue, which is whether impounded water, that is water impounded behind the dam structure, is a water body for the purpose of the MPS, I think is the issue you're raising, but I might have got that wrong.
That's the issue, and if they are water bodies, then should they be should the permits which authorise their continuance be subject to the same short-term permitting regime as other species of water permits?
Be subject to the same, what was that?
Short-term consent regime.
Should they be?
So the significance of that is that the Regional Council's case for 6-year permits is that it may not be appropriate to renew those permits in the light of the Land and Water Regional Plan. The question arises, if they're water bodies, would draining those water bodies be anticipated then?
So it may not be appropriate to renew.
Yes.
Well, for longer than 6 years anyway.
Correct.
Yeah. So maybe not be appropriate to renew, for renew. May not be appropriate to renew permits for longer than 6 years. And then you raise the issue of whether the dam should be drained.
Well, because if the permit's not renewed, that's the consequence, that the dams would have to be drained.
And that is your theoretical future environment, is it? It's your theoretical future environment, and the question to test that is what? What's the test on a hypothetical, whether it is?
Well, in terms of the Hawthorne case law, as to whether that's a likely outcome.
Fanciful or not is the test, isn't it?
For the permitted baseline, yes, ma'am.
So, okay, so how would the court go about testing the hypothetical that the permits will not be renewed and the dams will be drained?
Well, that's not quite the proposition.
Oh, what is your proposition?
The proposition is if they're water bodies and the needs of the water bodies are the first priority of Objective 2.1 of the NPS, is it appropriate to contemplate that they might be drained at the end of 6 years?
Is it appropriate? What does appropriate mean in this context?
Well, in terms of whether that's consistent with Objective 2.1 of the NPS.
Is there any issue that the rivers or streams filling those dams are water bodies?
They would have been.
Yep. So is the legal issue, there's no issue that the rivers and streams filling the dams with water bodies, the issue is the impounded water therefore also a water body to be regarded as a water body? Is that your issue?
That's correct, ma'am.
That is a legal and planning issue, isn't it?
Well, the question of whether it's a water body is a legal issue, the consequence of that in terms of the achievement of Objective 2.1 and how that interrelates with policy, with Plan Change 7 out of ISOBMIT's planning matter.
Well, the consequences are planning. So the question of whether a water body is a... What was it again? Whether the impounded water is a water body is a legal issue.
Yes.
Consequences of A, impounding, and B, draining, I would have thought. Draining. Planning.
Yeah. I mean, the context is I don't get the sense from any party in this proceeding that draining dams is contemplated.
No, well, so why are we running with this?
Well, because that's the consequence of Plan Change 7, is that if those permits aren't renewed at the end of... at the end of the 6 years, then that's a possibility that dam owners have to confront.
You know, isn't that for the decision maker to come? Because it may well be that that a decision is taken not to renew dam structures, a dam structure. if that is the decision, then the non-renewal of the structure and any hydro or irrigation that take off it or are dependent upon it is a matter to be considered in the future. But I don't understand that any of these dams, at least the dams that we've at Quarters identified, are not to be renewed.
Well,
so you're dealing with a hypothetical in 6 years' time or whenever. Yeah.
Yes. Well, but the problem is, and this is the purpose of Mr. Sheehan's evidence, is to understand what the consequence between now and that 6 years is in terms of dam owners' ability to manage those dams in accordance with their legal obligations beyond the
amount. I get that that's an important but different issue. Not before us is a decision by a dam owner not to seek a renewal. Unless, or is it your case that, well, if you don't give us long-term consents, well, nothing will be removed and there will be no irrigation in central Otago?
Well, it's similar to what you heard yesterday from Ms. Foran for Trustpower, is that uncertainty about whether the consents can be renewed in 6 years' time has practical implications for the maintenance of these structures.
It may well do.
Yes.
That's the thing. It may well do. And there is a lot of uncertainty about the process after, you know, going forward in 6 years' time. There just has to be.
Yes. And so the case is really as simple as this, which is that if nobody is contemplating that the other than that the dams should be drained at the end of 6 years, where is the value in having those dams captured by Plan Change 7?
I don't know, because I mean, we are trying to assist parties who have an interest in dams and permits around dams to put into place an evidential, you know, factual basis upon which policy can be tested, either new policy in PC 7 for a longer duration and anything else that might hang off that, or going in the operative plan. We are doing our best to assist your clients in this. I don't know that a technical argument, whether it is impounded water is or is not a water body, assists. I don't even, and I'm sorry, I'm just not sure where that is going. I am sure it is really important for council to confer and identify the issues so that we can actually track the thinking through evidence and through submission.
Yes, well, that's a work in progress, and we are doing that. And
I'm sure you ought to be doing this in relation to Mr. Curran's evidence as well. What are the issues? Because, you know, I've said and said again, there is so much evidence now before us. that it's not always clear what are the issues, planning or legal issues, and what's the factual basis underpinning it as well. So I'm going to ask you to do, we'll allow that evidence, leave is granted to produce that evidence, but before Mr. Curran comes to the stand, you to have conferred and identify what are the issues, both planning and legal, arising out of Mr. Curran's evidence. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Just check to see if there's anything else I'm meant to be covering off in the draft minute, which is written. Sensitivity analysis. What's happening there? Ms. Malholt.
So I've been working on that overnight, Your Honour, in terms of some further work for the experts to do on that appendix to so that it sits with the joint witness statement that has been produced and does provide some further explanation and addresses the matters that you were raising yesterday. So that is a work in progress.
Okay, so when do you have that done by? This Friday?
That would be the intention, Your Honour, because we need that for next week.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. So that's Friday the 21st, and that is to, has that joint witness statement gone up on the website yet? The attachment which came in Friday, probably.
No, I believe it has not.
Has, okay. Probably it's best to perhaps go in as an addendum to an amended document or to be refiled, because at the moment it is not helpful.
Yes,
and it's actually troubling.
Yes, I think particularly the discussion around the use of the term average in that document, I think it's best if it's perhaps not on the website. It has been circulated to council for those who were participating in it, so they do have a copy of it without relying on the website.
Okay, that. So we'll just, we will withdraw that from the website. It is plainly not helpful, absent any explanation. It's got purports to change something which the planners had at least agreed to, so we don't want to. So we'll have you refile. It's not your fault, it's your witnesses. So we'll have you refile on Friday, and that's what we'll load to the website. And I don't know whether you want tracking or not tracking on that document, but or just to refile it. I mean, there's virtually nothing there in terms of text anyway, so.
Yes, it's a matter of working with what's there and fleshing that out with explanation. Mm-hmm. And the question for the court is whether the court would be assisted by where there are some amendments in that document. From what I can see, putting the amendment that refers to average to one side, the amendments to the formula for removing atypical data are minor, just wordsmithing amendments from what I can see. Whether the court would be assisted by those changes being made or being shown in the full plan change appendix that was attached to the 7 May joint witness statement, so that you're only looking at one document.
Oh, I see. So actually bring it forward into the 7 May as an amendment to 7 May rather than as a separate attachment in and of itself, is that what you're saying?
So there would be a document attachment that sits with that joint witness statement, because this testing has come out of that joint witness statement. But in terms of the any further amendments that are recommended, if they are tracked into the 7 May version of the plan change so that everyone's working off one document for next week.
That would be really helpful. I mean, we did spot the two formula, and again, explanation needs to be given as to what the formula represents. It looks that to be that a lot of data has been run and you're looking for formula that best describes the outcomes of those data runs or something. That seemed to be it. But again, there's just nothing there. Yeah.
Yes, in my understanding, the purpose of that testing was to confirm the formula that was in the joint witness statement, and if you amended some of the values, whether that had significant changes. And I think the confirmation was that the experts were happy with the formula. I think the wordsmithing is just a better choice of words rather than actually having an effect on how the formula works.
And I haven't got the, you know, that JWS is 100 pages at least, and so I haven't got to the back end of even that document in terms of trying to understand what the formula represent or doesn't represent, and so there needs to be an explanation.
Yes, and I have asked for that explanation to be in this attachment to set out the purpose for that, call it step four, that formula, where that's come from in the previous joint witness statements, the purpose for it and how it works.
Yeah. Now, so that would be, we're quite happy to receive that as, I think, as a track change to the 7 May, or not?
The only thing I'm wondering about is if these are the technical witnesses as opposed to the planning witnesses, does there need to be some differentiation so there isn't some confusion with the planner saying, we never saw that, we don't like that, what's that about?
Yes, and this has been discussions between, given the timing, between the technical experts and not the wider planning experts, so I would have in that attachment any changes identified it in a different colour as being those changes that are agreed to by the technical experts if we don't have time for agreement of the planning witnesses on that. Now, in terms of the amendments that have been made to the formula, I don't anticipate there being a level of disagreement between the experts and the planners on that. And there is the addition of the sentence that has the reference to average in it, that hasn't been agreed to by all of the experts, so that does need to be further worked on, and that may change as a result of discussions between now and
And you're talking there about planners or even the technical people?
I think the technical people in the first instance, but
they
bringing
them, agree.
But bringing, well, yeah. I understand in terms of the timing, there wasn't the time for all of those to agree, but the witnesses who did agree to it wanted it to be on the record. Because
so I think there was about four from memory.
Yes.
Yeah, and then there was one who was in court last week, so he couldn't participate, and then there were several others whose views aren't recorded, I don't think, but yeah. Okay.
Yes, there were emails going backwards and forwards of all of the technical witnesses, I understand, other than Mr. McTavish, who wasn't in court, and they are signatories to that document. But we will clarify all of that in the next iteration of that.
All right, so as I understand it, you want as an attachment the sensitivity testing, the runs themselves, and that's fine, that's all that's going to be dealt with, and that'll be coming as a replacement document. And then you want to amend the 7 May, the 7 May JWS and to record the formula, the amendments to the formula and any proposed amendment to the methodology, which includes the word average back again, that is to come into attract changes to the JWS dated the 7th of May. You will at that stage, everybody will at that stage, have their planners and technical witnesses record their agreement or otherwise to those amendments to the 7 May JWS. If they agree, why do they agree? If they disagree, why do they disagree? and what is it anyway that they're actually proposing here? So, you know, so we actually have some context. Yeah. Is that what you're wanting?
Yes.
Is everyone happy with that? Yes, everyone's happy with that. Okay.
I thought they were going to provide us some background evidence on the process of reaching those formulas.
In terms of the purpose for this formula, or yeah, in terms of stepping back to the previous joint witness statement explaining
how the formula's evolved.
Okay. I can get that included in that document as well, if you'd
just
find
so
that of assistance.
Some appreciation. There are all sort of sensitivity testing, I think, but some background on that would be helpful, I think, for us,
okay,
if we can. Thank you.
All right, so I've recorded that in relation to the dams, by tomorrow at 9 a.m. we will have a clear idea what are the issues, together with the dams identified, you know, if they're more than what we've noted, particularly. We've asked Dahlia if you could send to Mr. Page Mr. McMillan's brief of evidence yesterday. So you've just sent that through to Mr. Page, so he knows what that's Fraser Dam, so he knows what the thinking was there by a representative there.
Discussion.
It's actually in his evidence. I'm sure he's tracking in his evidence
as
a concern
well
about dam integrity, yeah. But it'll be there in the transcript too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He talked about the fact that they were a part owner and the reason when the things were handed over and the reason was to provide electricity, if my recollection is correct. But yeah,
I've noticed that. I've noted that. Was it Friday or was it in 2 days' time, which is Thursday, Dr. Snowden's report? Which one? Which is Wednesday, Thursday. But the end of close of business Thursday?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, close of business Thursday, Dr. A report by Dr. Snelder presenting analysis of the raw data from March, including NOF analysis and trends. So that'll be and that'll be a brief of evidence anyway. Correct?
Yes.
Yep.
It'll be a very short brief attaching the report itself.
Oh, I see. Yep. So he's actually got a full
There's
report there, has he?
134-page
okay
report, which actually helpfully steps through and shows the current state of affairs.
Okay. Right. And what do we say for the dam issues? Dam issues to come and when? The issues in relation to dam, both the identification of the dams of concern before Mr. Curran gives his evidence.
Yes, I'd written down 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Yeah, and then I've written that down too. And then the general issues as to dams by 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, and that includes also the issue raised in Mr. Curran's evidence about whether impounded water arising out of whether impounded water is a water body. And those are both legal and planning issues. Right, okay, so that minute should issue today with those additional. We will also be saying in the minute we are going to be talking to planners about the drafting of objective policies and methods. So while, you know, they're agreed who their representatives are, all are invited to attend. Yep. Okay.
In that respect, ma'am, You may recall I filed a memorandum in respect of Ms Stiles, who's largely unavailable next week, but could join by way of an AVL link.
Okay.
Which Your Honour did grant leave for that to occur. So I just need to remind you.
You're right to remind me. I mean, we've got so much surge now happening with the documentation.
Yeah,
that was very efficient of me. I made that direction and promptly forgot about it.
Mum, I'm sorry. It was just that Ms Stiles is in charge and leading a large council work stream and is all over the Marlborough region that week.
That mediation. Public engagement. There's a lot happening in Marlborough, I know.
And Murphy's Law will be, Mum, that the day that Ms Stiles may attend will be the location with the least reliable internet access, I'm sure.
Okay. So, that's fine. Yep. Okay, so that's kind of dependent on what day we're actually going, you know, and it's for you guys to get back to Mr. Cooper by Friday. And that actually might build in some reliable internet access consideration for you to attend by AVL. This is the court's questions by AVL. Okay, so that's good. All right. Okie dokie. Sorry to take up so much time. So we are with you. Yeah.
Mum, just before I call Ms Stiles, I should have confirmed last night that I provided Madam Registrar with a casebook of the authorities referred to.
Yep.
Not included in that were those central government policy documents that I referenced in my submissions that Your Honour would like to receive, being the Section 32 on the RPS, the Regulatory Impact Statement and the Implementation Guide. My intention was to print copies of those overnight, but two issues with that. One, I'm well away from my office, and secondly, they exceed 500 pages, and I'm not so sure of the utility in providing a 342-page regulatory impact statement that addresses matters well beyond what I was referencing to the court. So I can't have Ms Stiles produce that, and I will speak to my friends as to whether those documents can be admitted by way of consent. I'm not relying them on any other purpose than they say what they say, and they're not evidence or any opinion as such other than central government documentation.
All right. Well, no, I'm happy with that. Just leave it for you to talk with your friends about producing that, I think, as you said, as part of the common bundle.
Yes.
So that's fine.
Thank you,
All right. Thank you.
All right,
so
Mum.
We'll swear you in, unless you've been sworn in and I haven't been. You haven't. Okay, good.
I do.
Good morning, Ms Stiles.
Good morning.
Stiles, your full name is Stephanie Stiles?
Stephanie Amanda Stiles, to be precise.
Well, I should have asked. I didn't see that in your evidence. So, Stephanie Amanda Stiles, thank you. And you are a senior resource management planner at the firm Boffa Miskell?
I am.
You hold the qualifications and experience set out on page 2 of your evidence in chief?
It is.
And you have prepared evidence in chief dated 5 February 2001?
Yes.
And you also prepared a supplementary statement dated 23 March of this year as well?
I did.
You have participated and been a signatory in two joint witness processes, the first in relation to hydroelectricity generation, as it relates to the Schedule 10A?
Yes.
And you also participated in, I should have mentioned the three actually, the Planners Joint Witness Conference and also the Joint Planner and Technical Conference of 4 to 6 May, is that correct?
I did.
And do you have any amendments to your brief of evidence?
No, I don't.
So you can confirm that your evidence in chief and your supplementary statement are true and correct to the best of your knowledge?
Correct.
Given the passage of time, I understand you've prepared a short summary statement, and I'll ask you to read from that to the court, please.
Thank you. Good morning. My evidence focuses on proposed plan change 7 to the regional plan Water for Otago, or PC7, in relation to its impacts on Trustpower's operations in the region. PC7 impacts Trustpower's operations regarding, firstly, the ability to efficiently and effectively obtain replacement consents, and secondly, the ability to obtain an appropriate duration for any new consents for water associated with enhancements or maintenance. Renewable energy is a matter of national significance, and the benefits of existing and new renewable energy are recognised under Section 7J of the Resource Management Act. In my opinion, PC7, in addition to addressing freshwater matters under the NPSFM, must recognise and provide for renewable electricity generation activities in order to give effect to the RMA, NPSREG and the Otago RPS. The Council reports and evidence emphasise the intent for PC7 to reduce paper allocation and discourage investment in irrigation and land use intensification, but largely disregard the same impacts on existing investment in infrastructure for hydroelectricity generation. No acknowledgement is given within PC7 as notified to the level of existing investment, the national importance of hydroelectricity generation, the local and regional benefits of hydroelectricity generation, or the differences between hydroelectricity generation and the primary sector activities such as irrigation. I recognise the evolution of evidence and the recommended Plan Change 7 text during the course of this hearing process, and I have considered the proposed and recommended changes as they have arisen. I have been involved, as Mr Welsh says, in the Hydro Planners and Planners Plus Technical Experts conferences and support the approach put forward in the May 7 JWS, which in summary includes amending the objective to better emphasise the purpose of the plan change, my preference being for version A of that text, amending the controlled activity rule and the associated schedule to apply to the majority of deemed permit renewals using water meter data, technical amendments to Schedule 10A4 to achieve that, amending the RDA rule and the associated matters of discretion to apply to all other deemed permit renewals where water meter data is inadequate to represent historical use, and retaining the non-complying activity status for applications seeking an increase in water take. In my view, all of these points enable better connection of consent renewals to historical use and would enable appropriate assessment for hydroelectricity generation activities through the RDA pathway if water meter data is inadequate. This is a more efficient method of managing such data issues than a controlled activity pathway or a non-complying activity, enabling the data record to be examined on a case-specific basis. In addition to the agreed matters above, the issue of duration of consents was not explored within the conferencing. I remain of the view that hydroelectricity generation activities, both in relation to consent renewals and new water takes, should not automatically be subject to a maximum six-year duration. This is especially the case where the implication of seeking greater durations is a non-complying consent with a policy position requiring avoidance, such that no application could conceivably pass the second threshold test under Section 104D. That approach does not recognise the importance of hydroelectricity generation to the region and nationally, the existing investment in infrastructure, or the complexity of the existing schemes functionally. I continue to recommend that the duration policies, 10A22 and 10A23, be amended to enable consents for hydroelectricity generation activities to be considered for a longer period, in addition to including recognition for hydroelectricity generation in the PC7 objective. I also continue to recommend that an additional rule be included enabling replacement applications for hydroelectricity generation activities for more than 6 years' duration to be assessed on their merits as a discretionary activity. I consider that the combination of the outcomes of the JWS and the additional provisions relating to duration set out above in my evidence in chief and supplementary evidence, in which I've provided to you in a summary version in Annex A to this summary, are an effective and efficient way to provide for hydroelectricity generation activities within PC7 and give effect to the relevant national policy statements and regional policy statement. Having considered the intent of Plan Change 7 and the necessity to give effect to all higher order documents, I consider that PC7, as notified and recommended in the 7 May JWS, is inadequate in recognising and providing for hydroelectricity generation. I do consider it possible to give effect to both the NPS FM and NPS REG, and I'm of the view that there's no inherent conflict between the way the two NPSs, as the use of water for renewable electricity generation can be undertaken in a way that recognises te mana o te wai and which meets the hierarchy of obligations set out in the NPS FM. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms Stiles. I just wonder if it would be useful if you could turn to your annexure and explain to the court the various differences between red tracking, blue tracking and your black text.
Certainly. What I was trying to do here, Your Honour and Commissioners, was help give you a summary of the different pieces of the jigsaw puzzle. And so what I've given you here in red are the outputs from that latest joint witness statement on the 7th of May. So those are the ones that I've put commentary down the right-hand side saying where things have come from. The blue are my additions, which are the things that were not covered by the joint witness statement process in the conferencing, generally relating specifically to hydro and or to duration. So where there's, in the left-hand column, where there's black text, that's the base plan change text where it wasn't altered through the joint witness statement. And what I haven't included is things like the lengthy schedule and all of its bits and pieces, just the main guts of the plan change. And just a really, really simple statement at the very end of that in relation to hydro, what the activity status outcomes would result in.
Okay. Thank you, Ms Stiles. Can you please answer any questions my friends in the court will have for you?
Possibly you, Mr. Page.
Yes, I think so.
Yep.
Ms. Stiles, looking at your drafting attached to your summary and the blue additions that you've made to the provisions, the provision that you've made for hydroelectricity generation seems to be specific for take and use permits. Have I understood that correctly?
Which piece of blue are you referring to?
Well, let's look at the discretionary activity rule.
Yes.
10A 3.2.1. Do you have that?
Yes.
It refers to... Oh, I see. So, do I understand if where A or B is concerned, it's any deemed permit or a take of surface, taking use of surface water if it's not a deemed permit?
Correct. It's exactly the same wording as the rest of the rules,
yeah.
But the piece that makes this specific to hydro is at the top of the next page,
yes,
where it specifies those activities relating to hydro.
Okay. So what I'm trying to understand from the drafting is whether you intended to capture permits for the storage of water for hydro generation purposes.
No, I had not. They don't come into these provisions currently.
Yes. Is there a reason for that?
Simply because they're not currently covered by the plan change.
All right. Is that because Trustpower doesn't have permits for or damming permits that are covered by Plan Change 7?
The deemed permits that Trustpower has that are covered by Plan Change 7 that they have sought renewal for relate,
yes,
to the intakes, the taking of water and then putting of that through into the races and the hydro system. So that's where I have focused my energy. I don't know the wider hydro resource for the region.
Okay. So if there are other permits, for example, with Falls Dam, where Pioneer Energy generates from, that have permits to impound water behind the dam and the water is used for hydroelectricity purposes, would it be consistent with your approach to include the damming permit as part of your regime?
It would seem that on face value, but I don't know enough about the specifics to be precise.
Okay. Thank you. Nothing further, Mum.
Thank you. Ms. Baker-Galloway, anything?
I am cross-examining the Stiles, but I was going to go after Mr.
Moore.
Thank you.
Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Your Honour. Good morning. Just want to explore a little further the level of your understanding in relation to schemes or generators of electricity across the Otago region other than Trustpower. So my friend has just asked you a similar question, but when you were preparing your evidence, did you have it squarely in mind that the factual situation you were responding to was simply the Trustpower set of facts in terms of its deemed permits?
That is my focus, yes. I'm aware there's other hydro, but I have not focused on that. I don't know the details of the other schemes.
And in relation to the Trustpower schemes, is it your understanding that the various takes and uses of water are exclusively for hydroelectricity generation?
That is my understanding for the ones that relate to these deemed permits.
And you don't have any understanding as to the use to which water is put by other hydroelectricity generators in the region?
I do not have details.
And you haven't turned your mind to any implications in terms of your planning framework in relation to those other situations?
Not in any detail, no.
I thought we might move now to the NPS REG. And I'm assuming you have a copy with you.
I do.
There is a copy in the bundle. And bundle reference number is volume 3, CB813. Volume 3, CB813. I'd like to start with the preamble, which is on page 3 of that document, CB815, and in particular the second to last paragraph in the preamble, which I'm sure you've read and reread. And
I am familiar with it.
Very good. Now, that part of the preamble makes it clear that the NPS REG does not apply to the allocation and prioritisation of fresh water, as these are matters for regional councils to address in a catchment or regional context and may be subject to the development of national guidance in the future. Now, I want to start with the very end of that passage, national guidance in the future. When you think about allocation and prioritisation of resources and you think about national guidance that has been issued subsequent to the NPS REG, is the National Policy Statement for Freshwater Management the type of guidance that is being referred to in this part of the preamble?
I suspect so.
I want now to understand what you take the words allocation and prioritisation to mean in the context of this preamble. So when you think about allocation and what that means, what do you understand in this context allocation is referring to?
My understanding of the term water allocation relates to the process through which the Regional Council needs to understand what is in the various water resources, what water is available, and then determine how that is best allocated between different users, coupled with the prioritisation that goes with that allocation, as would normally be done through a regional plan, regional water plan process.
And so when you think about allocation and prioritisation, those issues are addressed in a regional planning framework which establishes a flow and allocation regime for a water body?
Usually, yes.
And when you think about prioritisation, what do you understand prioritisation to mean in this context?
In the context of it being linked to allocation, I consider that that's most likely to be intended to mean how the allocation is prioritised between and to different users within what's available within a catchment or water body.
And when you think about both allocation and prioritisation of a resource, do you accept that resource consent decisions have and can have the effect of allocating a resource?
Yes, they have that effect as guided or enabled through the planning provisions that they sit under.
In the absence of a flow and allocation regime considering the allocation and prioritisation of water, do you accept that resource consent decisions can have the effect of prioritising the use to which water is put?
I'm not sure that I would call it prioritising. Allocating, yes, but prioritising only by virtue of what is before them, not in any holistic sense.
So if the entirety of a water resource was allocated to a single use through a resource consent decision, would that prioritise that use over other potential future uses?
It would allocate the resource to that use. I guess you could call it a priority. It's more of a default from the nature of that consent having been granted than any deliberate decision to grant a priority in the sense that this is intending.
So you're seeing, or you're reading this part of the preamble and allocation and priority as synonymous in terms of their meaning?
As part of a deliberate process by which both aspects are considered together in a regional planning context, yes.
Now, we've touched briefly on the national guidance in the future part of this paragraph and the national policy statement for freshwater management. That does set out the framework within which allocation decisions are made in relation to freshwater?
Correct. From the point that regional councils apply that new NPS-FM, the process through which they must go by to work through allocation prioritisation and new regional planning frameworks, yes.
And when this national policy statement for renewable electricity generation was prepared, there was some guidance material prepared?
There was.
And you were going to produce that this morning, but given Mr Welsh's challenges with printing the 500 pages, etc., we don't have the document before us, but are you familiar with the guidance document?
I've read it, but not recently. I wouldn't say I'm intimately familiar with it.
Are you familiar with the part of the document that refers to the interrelationship between that NPS and other government initiatives and policies?
I've read that, yes.
And just for the record, that would be located on page 3 of that guidance material. And there's a paragraph on page 3 in relation to the then National Policy Statement for Freshwater Management 2011. You understand the passage I'm referring to?
I've read it, yes.
And that passage notes that the NPS for freshwater management will be at the 2011 iteration, provides direction and guidance on the framework required at a regional level to avoid over-allocation of freshwater, and that no new hydroelectricity development will need to operate within that framework. So again, the guidance material is clearly signalling that decisions around allocation of freshwater are to be considered under the NPS for freshwater management.
As it was at that time, which has obviously moved on a few steps since then.
Yes, it has, but do you accept that that perhaps gives an indication as to the separation between consideration of allocation to occur under separate national guidance? Allocation isn't to be considered through the lens of the NPS REG.
I don't believe that it was intended to be quite that simple. I believe that what they were intending was to not signal that the REG is intended to trump any other national policy statement when matters of allocation are being considered at a regional level holistically under all the relevant documents. If you weren't to have any regard to REG when setting allocation, then you wouldn't have things like hydro as a specific activity within the allocation lists, which regional councils commonly do. So it's part of considering all relevant national direction at the time that you're going through such processes.
And you touch on that later on in your evidence about the need to give effect to, in this context, both national policy statements.
All relevant national policy statements should be considered at the time of any planning policy framework.
And you express an opinion that the NPS REG and the NPS FM can be read together. There's no conflict between them in your opinion?
In my opinion, there's no need for an inherent conflict between them at a policy level.
To move now to the objective in the NPS REG. And you've helpfully set out the objective at paragraph 6.3 for statement of evidence in chief. And over the page at paragraph 6.4 of your evidence in chief, you provide some analysis in relation to the need to give effect to the overarching objective. And you say that Plan Change 7 needs to recognise that there are existing resource consents relating to existing hydroelectricity power schemes in the region that include deemed permits and consents, which will need to be renewed for operation to continue and for new permits that seek to enhance or maintain the scheme. You then go on to note that PC7 hinders that ability because of the six-year duration, which you say does not provide certainty for trust power or security for the generation of supply. Now, when you read the objective, does the objective refer to providing certainty for generators or to security of supply?
Not explicitly, but I believe that to be considered within the providing for operation, maintenance and upgrading of existing renewable, which is directed by the objective. So those aspects are simply part of operating and renewing and upgrading large complex systems that are in place.
The objective itself provides no explicit reference to consent duration.
No, it does not.
And when you think about Plan Change 7, Plan Change 7 does provide for the reconsenting of the existing scheme.
For 6 years as a controlled activity or restricted discretionary under the recommended joint witness statement, yes. Longer than that is not provided for, enabled.
You then go on to consider the policies, and policy B in particular. Mm-hmm. You've set out at the top of your page 7 of your evidence in chief, subparagraph A of that policy, and that policy is about maintaining generation output of existing renewable electricity activities.
Yes.
Plan Change 7 with the recommended amendments in relation to the treatment of hydroelectricity generation, and by that I mean the controlled activity and more particularly the restricted discretionary activity, that does seek to maintain existing generation output?
My understanding from the technical advice through that conferencing is that to enable recognition of actual historical use for the hydro schemes requires the use of supplementary information to the existing water meter data, and therefore the proposed amendments through that joint witness statement, bringing that pathway as a possibility through the restricted discretionary activity, would be the mechanism of reflecting historical use and thereby maintaining that generation output, which otherwise would not be achievable through the way it was framed technically previously.
So assuming that the RDA does achieve that outcome, then maintenance of the existing generation output is enabled and facilitated by Plan Change 7?
To the extent that the deemed permit makes up part of that generation and, again, is qualified for that six-year period.
And then if you look at subparagraph B of the policy, it speaks to the potential effects of minor reductions. Again, the intention now through the RDA is not to reduce the availability and supply of water for hydroelectricity generation. And so that part of the policy now has been addressed.
Correct. That is the intent with having that pathway.
Say that again. Put that question again. I heard the answer was correct, but just didn't quite pick up on the whole thing.
So looking at the second part of the policy, subparagraph B, which speaks to the need to ensure that minor reduction in generation output do not occur, the changes now recommended in relation to the restricted discretionary activity would ensure that policy B is now achieved.
Yes, that was the intent of that pathway.
I want to move on now to the National Policy Statement for Freshwater Management, and if I can perhaps take you to paragraph 611 of your evidence in chief.
Do you want me to get the NPS as well?
It might be helpful to have that
remind me which bundle that's in.
Same bundle, yep. CB665, tab 4. And in this paragraph, you are referring to the need to address or give effect to both the NPSREG and, in this context, the NPSFM. And you note that there's no inherent conflict between the two NPSs because you say that the use of renewable electricity generation or the use of water for such can be undertaken in a way that recognises Te Mana o Te Wai.
Yes.
And which meets the hierarchy of obligations in the NPSFM. Now, when you think about the hierarchy of obligations in the NPSFM, what's your understanding of the first of those priorities?
The health and well-being of the freshwater environment, the ecosystems and resource.
And the place within which the hierarchy that hydroelectricity generation falls, do you see that as falling within priority 2 and/or 3?
I agree with what's been discussed previously in the hearing that it is in part in both priorities, 2 and 3.
And when you think about these priorities and the hierarchy, priority 1 needs to be done first before you move on to priorities 2 and 3.
Yes.
And when you think about priority 1, the health and well-being of the water body itself, and you think about the 4 irrigation races that Trustpower is seeking to reconsent, is it your understanding that those races essentially take all of the flow out of the 4 water bodies?
The takes from the creeks, I understand from the evidence that you've heard, the technical evidence, that most of the time they take what is available.
And in relation to the replacement applications that have been lodged, those applications seek to perpetuate the current taking regime?
I have not been involved in the writing or processing of those applications. I have a very brief overview of those, and I understand them to not be as simple as just rolling over the deemed permits. That's an aspect of them, but they've been applied for in the context of other aspects of the operation of those schemes. So they're being processed on a more holistic basis than just rolling over the existing take.
What do you mean by a more holistic approach?
So my understanding is that in parallel to those deemed permit renewals, there's also an application associated with each to regularise the historical situation of things like overland flows when it's raining, ending up in the water race and formalising that as a consent aspect, which it hasn't historically been done. So that changes the numbers, as I understand it, but I don't have detail of how that all works.
And the applications are also seeking to take even greater volumes of water from each of the water bodies in terms of higher flows?
No, my understanding is again that the intake is designed to take a certain flow after which it goes past and on down the waterway, but there's been further data or analysis that shows that under certain pressures more water can force its way down the pipes or races And so, again, that's an existing situation that's not changing, which these current consents are seeking to respect and put in writing as something that just happens when there's pressure.
So perhaps if I phrase that as regularising the way in which the intakes have historically been operating.
The very nature of them as an opportunistic take of water that happens to be there and or going past when it's raining or not, yes.
When you think about then the first priority in relation to Te Mana o Te Wai, and you think about the health and well-being of the water body itself, do you see any inherent conflict between an activity that takes the entirety of the flow of water from a water body and meeting the needs of that water body?
I think you've got to contextualise any kind of statement like that to the circumstances. As I understand it, in the case of the four trust power intakes that are being considered, the health and well-being of those water bodies and their ecosystems have been very much assessed and incorporated into that consenting regime. So that has been at the foremost of the assessment involved with those. And my understanding is that that assessment has shown those water bodies to be healthy and well-functioning.
So when you are thinking about the framework that you have recommended to be included in Plan Change 7, again, you have it very firmly on your mind, the factual situation relating to the trust power operation.
I do, yes.
And so some care would need to be exercised in terms of understanding the broader implications of that framework and how it might be used by other hydroelectricity generators.
And that was very much on my mind in recognising that you need to understand the circumstances of the case when you're applying these kind of considerations, hence my recommendation for a fully discretionary activity status for longer than 6 years, so outside the original intent, if you can call it that, of this plan change, to enable considerations of the case-specific issues that might arise.
When you think about the, or one of the overarching purposes of Plan Change 7, which is about ensuring that water allocation does not occur into the long term, such that the flow and allocation regimes to be established under the new land and water plan to come can be implemented sooner rather than later. Do you accept that long-term consents push against that outcome?
I think that could be said at face value, but I don't think making a sweeping judgment that all cases that would be the case. There's also the ability through what I've put forward to consider those kind of situations and under the discretionary activity status and to put in place adaptive management, review conditions or the like, should that be seen to be necessary.
Now, we're just going to pause there for morning tea. Just seeing the court's interest in what are the outcomes articulated by PC7 should a fully discretionary resource consent regime for permits greater than 6 years. So that's where we go. You said adaptive management, and what else did you say? Something else.
Adaptive management, review conditions, or similar mechanisms through conditions of a consent.
Okay, so good time to pause, because I saw Mr. Moore smile at me, presumably going next to what's the policy content or outcome for a fully discretionary regime. And that's important to understand that. Okay, cool. Take a break.
All rise.